Listen to this overture. Notice anything about who's playing? Is anyone missing? There's no low strings. Tchaikovsky's opening to the iconic ballet, The Nutcracker, is even called Overture Miniature, a perfect title for a piece lighter than air. Setting the stage for ballerinas and children, it's buoyant, playful, and according to Nashville Ballet artistic director Paul Vasterling, it's all about magic.
The magic of this season, the magic of the holiday seasons that we have here, and the magic of being a kid, and that sort of wide-eyed approach to life and the world around you.
I, too, was wide-eyed as Nashville Ballet let me sneak in to the dress rehearsal of The Nutcracker. The shepherd and shepherdess were finishing their divertissement while I climbed over stretching ballerinas backstage to find a quiet room and give Paul Vasterling a little pop quiz to figure out just how traditional is his version of The Nutcracker.
So the New York Times published a story last year, 10 ways to tell if your Nutcracker is traditional.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to read these.
Great.
And let you respond to them.
Okay.
Number one, it's not a love story.
Mine is not a love story. It is about finding out what love is. It's not a love story, though.
Number two, Drosselmeyer and the Sugar Plum Fairy never meet.
They don't meet in mine.
Which led me to the question, like Batman and Bruce Wayne, are they the
Maybe
same
they're the
person?
Same person. Maybe so.
I want to see that version
they're,
of the Nutcracker.
They're each other's alter egos. That's actually a pretty good idea. I kind of like it, especially for the 21st century, right?
Number three, you see no characters during the overture.
Mine is not traditional in that sense. You do see characters during the overture. You know, I have this sort of Wizard of Oz-ish idea that is permeates. It goes from sepia, so from a world of no color, to color and light. And the idea is that Drosselmeyer brings her to those things, sort of light, imagination, color. And that's kind of the ballet progresses. So we kind of start in this sepia world.
Number four, Clara should be played by a kid, and she should only dance at the party.
She dances at the party in mine, but she also dances when she arrives in the land of the sweets because she's really happy.
Number five, Clara is not on point.
Number five, Clara is not on point. I really did not want to put my Clara on point. You know, point shoes are so magical. Right? And she's a human, she's a person. And it takes away from the magic of the Sugar Plum Fairy if Clara's on point.
Number six, the score goes in order.
Act one is exactly how Tchaikovsky wrote it, and he wrote it really well, which means it's hard to cut and change, right? Second act, I wanted to just shorten just a little bit for attention span. So I took out a repeat where they tell the story of what happened, you know, so you hear the rat music one more time. And I just thought it's lovely, but I thought we could skip it. So I have a little tiny cut there. I took the, and put the Waltz of the Flowers near the beginning of the act to give us a little bit of a respite from these dance episodes. So in that sense, it's not traditional. That's the only thing though, not much.
Number seven, the tree grows.
Tree grows.
Number eight, the post-battle music should not be danced to.
That is not non-traditional. That's what we call the snow pas de deux, this beautiful, beautiful adagio. That was originally just this, you know, it was called something about in the snow forest or something. And Balanchine's does not
that
dance
is,
in
that is
part.
Actually the only Nutcracker I've seen.
The Balanchine.
Yeah. Mm. So.
The bed kind of floats around in that
right.
scene. Yeah.
And I remember kind of thinking, why isn't anybody dancing?
To this really gorgeous music. Many a choreographer have thought that. And thus.
That's not a love story, though. Number nine, Mother Ginger. Apparently, Mother Ginger is not in a lot of productions because she's too bawdy.
We have a Mother Ginger. We call her Madame Bonbonniere because she has her bonbons. But she's basically the idea of Mother Ginger. She's the woman of many children, and she's kind of crazy.
Number 10, the pas de deux should be between the Sugar Plum Fairy and her cavalier.
That is correct.
Okay.
So I get about you know, 7 or 8 out of 10. That's pretty good.
But if we only have the slightest record of the original, you know, what's original? Bees in a Hive? Isn't that what's at the end in the original?
Right.
Okay, and we already knew Nashville's was not completely traditional because, for one, it's not set in Nuremberg.
No, it is set here in our hometown.
Was there something pulling you to put your personal
When the executive director at the time came to me and said, I think we really should think about doing a new Nutcracker, I was like, oh, I don't know, man. That's a hard one to do. I mean, it's such a tradition, right? It's like in our bones. And I had been in the one I was doing since 1989. You know, 20 years of one same production, and I was like, how am I going to get this out of my bones, you know, to think of something different to do with it? You know, I wanted to connect to the community as much as I could here, and the sense of place. I was in the library and came across this little book of the Centennial Exhibition, which I didn't really know was around that much, and it, you know, just sort of occurred to me that there was a parallel between these international exhibits that someone could have seen at the exposition and the Divertissement in Act Two.
Have you added to it over time?
I haven't really added Nashville elements. I've added a lot of magic, and I change the choreography all the time. I just change a little bit. This year I've redone the Russian dance as a solo because of the guys I have are really great, and you know, I wanted to do something new for them. People see a lot more, you know, and they need to see more things. And so I, without messing with the music, I try to add a lot of things into it, little magic tricks and little things that are fun and grab your attention without, you know, really completely ignoring what the music is. It's a pretty tough balancing act, actually, there, because the score is so good, you know, and I don't want to mess it up. There's an actress here, and she's called the actress. Her name is Lucille Lesueur, and she was a Nashvillian. And she actually had a career on stage, but she ended up being the voice of the witch in Snow White. And so I imagine that she came home for the holidays in this production. So she's very, you know, she's very grand.
So she will be in the party scene?
She's in the party scene. You'll see her for sure. The party is in Bellmead Mansion, you know, inside of Bellmead Mansion. And when you get into Act Two, you go in, you see the Parthenon there. You know, you see the columns of the Parthenon. All of the characters are based on Nashville people, although I don't name them in the program because it's a little bit too complicated. But, you know, the Chancellor is Chancellor Kirkland from Vanderbilt. We call him that. And there's a physician that he had a name. They were all real people that I based them on. I wanted to keep it as kind of simple as possible for folks coming in to see it for the first time.
Is she Clara or is she Marie?
She's Clara. Yeah. And her name is the same as, you know, Stahlbaum is the same name. And she could have lived right, really close to here, actually. If you go down 6th Avenue toward where the Capitol is now, there were houses on that street, and she could have easily have lived there. And, you know, when you look out at the end, or you can look in the window of at the parlor in the party scene, and you see the Capitol there. And at the end, you find Clara, of course, asleep on her couch in her house with the, you know, the night sky of Nashville over her.
It's time for a short break.
When you want to listen to classical music but aren't near a radio, 91 Classical is still your source for great performances from Middle Tennessee and around the world. Stream music on our website while you work. Tune in via the Nashville Public Radio app on your smartphone, or tell your smart speaker you'd like to hear 91 Classical.
Welcome back to Keeping Score. Paul Vasterling created Nashville's Nutcracker,
his own spin on a beloved tradition. So I wanted to know how common it is to make these kinds of changes.
I was reading about the history of the Nutcracker, and it's gone through so many different versions, but that's not that unusual for a ballet, right?
You know, the text of these classic ballets, the way we dance them, even though we say that the choreography is after Ivanov, the original choreographer, you know, the dancers were so different at the time. And a really good example of that is if you look at in Act Two of Nutcracker, we do what is thought of as the Grand Pas de Deux. Is after Ivanov, the original choreography. But the truth was is that in 1892, men didn't really do lifts. They certainly didn't do overhead lifts. If you think about what that choreography might have looked like and how different it is now, the ability, the technical abilities that they have is so different than they had then. Even when I was a dancer, the dancers now are so much better than we were here. I mean, the dancers just improve every year with training, with cross training, with, you know, scientific, all those things have helped make dancers better. And so they can do more things. And then, of course, we, the choreographers, put more things in. You know, if you and I could go back in time right now and see it, we would both like go, oh, wow.
I think if we went back and heard it, we would do the same thing.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
Because the instruments compare, maybe the violins from the 1890s are still being used now. I mean, like in the Nashville Symphony, there are violins that are older than that.
Right.
But I mean, don't you think that like the celeste, the very first celeste that he had imported probably sounded like garbage?
Right.
While we're talking about the celeste, my favorite character of the ballet, who I think is the real hero of the piece. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about the Sugar Plum Fairy for a minute?
Of course. You know, that choreography, the choreography for the Grand Pas de Deux and for her solo is the most traditional that we have, and it is brilliant. The choreography enhances the music and vice versa. How that is built around and just the way it is fit to the rhythms of the Tchaikovsky is pretty darn brilliant. I mean, that's my favorite part of her. To grab onto the role is kind of difficult because she doesn't really have a character. And what we think about her as being in her and her cavaliers, she introduces Clara to the idea of love, which is a theme that comes back in many of the things that I do. And if you look at the Sugar Plum's tutu, you see that she has hearts on her. And I always, you know, you're explaining in this pas de deux, you're explaining to this young woman who has just become infatuated with this young man that she sees, the nephew of Drosselmeyer, and she just becomes sort of like, wow, who is it? And then the Sugar Plum says, this is what love really is. And, you know, even in the Pas de Deux, there's a place, I kind of love it, is they, at the very end, they finish a step, some turns downstage, and then they walk. And it's a heart-shaped pattern. They walk up to, and they stop, and they both gesture to her and make a heart, and then they come back together at the center of the heart. It's quite lovely, actually.
I also like to say that's how you can tell it's a little girl's dream in the end. The leaders of the realm are all women.
That's true.
Total matriarchy.
That's true. And it's the Dewdrop Fairy and the Sugar Plum Fairy. Those are the two. I mean, that's ballet, though. I mean, in ballet, the woman is the leader, being that point work is the realm of a female dancer, and they really do it, or able to do it better, kind of sets them apart in the world of ballet. And I like to think of it as something that sets them apart as being powerful. There's a specialness about being on point that the Sugar Plum Fairy kind of embodies. I mean, what we have, when she first enters, she comes down the stairs, and the first thing she does is a bourée, you know, the step that's on point, that's all, that sort of glides across the stage.
That whole description makes me think of being a little girl and putting on my mother's shoes.
Right.
And how that was such a power move.
Yes.
But the Sugar Plum Fairy has a pas de deux with her cavalier, and it always made me wonder, like, what is that love story? Like, between the two of them.
I mean, I think it's about perfect love. It really is. The music is so beautiful. I love that adagio so much.
And it,
still to this day.
It gives you so many goosebumps, and it is just a descending major scale.
I know.
And you wrote it on a dare.
40 years for me of Nutcracker. Not kidding. 40 years every year. I still adore that adagio. It's so beautiful and so just so brilliantly simple and so romantic. Thank you.
Balanchine say that the tree is the ballerina of Act One and the Sugar Plum Fairy is the ballerina of Act Two?
I never have heard that, but the tree is so important to me. Ask anybody around here. Drosselmeyer makes the tree grow, and then he throws light onto it, and then he changes the lights into colored light. You know, the reason that the music for the tree growing is so loud is because they needed it to be to mask the mechanics of the tree. If you can imagine, it was making a lot of noise as it was growing up, and that's why his music is so loud there. Some of the greatest music in the ballet, too. When the key changes, I adore that moment, too.
The harp solo at the beginning of the Waltz of the Flowers. I've played the Celeste part for Sugar Plum Fairy, but as excited as I was about that, I think I would have been more pumped to be the harpist at the beginning of Waltz of the Flowers.
Because that's a really nice part.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really gorgeous. I love the beginning of the snow, the part that shouldn't be choreographed per the New York Times. There's harp in that too. It starts with a harp, you know, in the very beginning. It's really beautiful. I have a lot of moments that I'm kind of a geek about it. I mean, I guess you'd have to be, you know, to see it and hear it every time. I can still remember my first experience of it. You know, I lived out in the country, kid on the bayou in this little town outside of New Orleans, and this woman recruited me in the summer to be in her school. And of course, first December that came around, I was in the Nutcracker. I was the Nutcracker. I couldn't do a thing. I just stood there. But I got to watch the whole thing. The music was what got me. I mean, of course the choreography did too, but I mean, music is what got me.
Tchaikovsky ballet scores.
Yeah. Hmm.
Do you have a what might have been moment with the music since you were a pianist? Do you have a little bit of a, oh, I could have been conducting that?
Oh man, I think that I am really frustrated. I think if I could, you know, have any profession, I would probably be a composer. That would be what I would really, you know, in the next life, I suppose. I like to just stand there and let the music wash over me. I don't want to have any responsibility for it. So I envy the conductor being able to stand there because you're surrounded by the music and it makes me want to move. But I don't know that I would want to conduct it, no. What I think is the best and when it really works is that the two work and mesh together and they enhance each other's existence. You know, the dance, the choreography, and the music, they're so connected. They're not, you know, I try not to mimic it too much, the music. I'm not trying to do every little single thing. I'm trying, when I do my best work as a choreographer, I accent the music in a different way and try to open up new things in it when I'm doing the best choreography that I've done, actually. It's gonna be magical. That's it. You just look for the magic, listen for the magic too.
Keeping Score is a production of Nashville Public Radio's 91 Classical. The show is edited by Nina Cardona and Anita Bug. Excerpts of the Nutcracker Suite came from the Cincinnati Pops and Montreal Symphony, and movements of the full ballet came from the Boston and St. Louis Symphonies. You can download the entire first season of Keeping Score on your favorite podcasting app and even through your smart speaker. Be sure to subscribe because in early 2019, we'll be switching up our format for a while and adding some new features. I'm Colleen Phelps. Thanks for listening to Keeping Score.